Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, October 27th, 2021. I'm your reader, Paula Carezzi. Wednesday's weather in the Cedar Rapids area will include isolated showers. The high in the Cedar Rapids area will be 56 and the overnight low 44. The lead story on the front page of Wednesday's Gazette is written by Marissa Payne and titled, Possible Casino Site Unsettled as Vote Nears. November 2nd gambling referendum may allow another application. When voters cast their ballots in the November 2nd local elections, they'll have the option of backing a measure to keep the door open for a Linn County community to seek permission from the state to operate a licensed casino. Where would a gambling facility be built should voters approve the measure and Cedar Rapids successfully leap the tall hurdle of getting approval from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission for another casino in the state? The likely developer says multiple locations have been explored, but nothing is set in stone yet. This is a key difference in the upcoming vote compared with 2013, when over 61% of Linn County voters first passed a gambling referendum. Investors have not yet put forth a proposal for a potential casino this time, but 8 years ago, some possibilities had already emerged before the vote. If voters pass the referendum again, Cedar Rapids, or any city in Linn County, could apply in perpetuity for a license from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission, the 5-member regulatory panel. The matter would never come before voters again. But the Cedar Rapids area will face a challenge in persuading the panel to award another license. Regulators in 2014 and 2017 dashed City Hall's hopes of seeing a casino here. They denied proposals out of concern one would, quote, cannibalize, end quote, the market. Should a proposal ever move forward, the City of Cedar Rapids has an agreement with the Cedar Rapids Development Group, which is made up of mostly local investors, through October 2029 for the city to exclusively support this group in an application. Jonathan Swain, president of Peninsula Pacific Entertainment, which would be the casino operator, said there has been no decision on a location or an architect. Quote, the first thing in this referendum, and that guarantees us the opportunity, and that's what we're really focused on, Swain said. Location possibilities. Having worked on bringing to life the Diamond Joe Casino in Dubuque, Swain said he has seen the possibilities of economic development by having such a tourist attraction downtown. The key objective is to build a casino downtown, he said. In the Gazette's September 30th mayoral candidate forum, Mayor Brad Hart mentioned downtown, Nubo, or Czech Village as the primary areas for a potential casino. Specifically, he mentioned city officials and developers had explored the possibility of the site of now-demolished Cooper's Mill and the former Farmstead site. He also told the Gazette that Lot 44 in Nubo was in consideration. Swain said developers had pitched the idea of building a casino at the downtown Cedar Rapids site of the city-owned DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel. While the idea of selling the hotel has come up over the years as Moody's bond rating service has dinged the city for owning a hotel as a credit risk, Hart said Cedar Rapids City Council members were firmly against a proposal to turn the hotel and convention complex into a casino when it was previously discussed months ago. Theoretically, it is also possible for developers, whether from the Cedar Rapids Development Group or another entity, could hunt for a location elsewhere in Linn County. But Swain said, quote, we're going to exhaust all opportunities to put it in the city of Cedar Rapids, end quote. Swain said he anticipates a proposal would be ready to come before the commission within 12 months of the referendum's passage. Before bringing a proposal forward, developers also would factor in the findings of a socioeconomic and market impact study that the State Commission hired a firm to conduct. Those findings are expected to be shared in the coming months. Quote, at some point along the process, because it is a quite expensive and lengthy process, we would want to see some signaling from the Commission that they're open to the idea, Swain said. Grow and thrive. Swain and other casino backers remain hopeful about the potential for a brick-and-mortar casino in Iowa's second-largest city. Supporters point to expansions of gambling in the bordering states of Nebraska and Illinois as a reason the Iowa Commission would now support a casino in Cedar Rapids as a way to keep more revenue in the state. Plus, there is an entirely new slate of members on the 5-person state commission compared with when Cedar Rapids was denied a license. Some are skeptical of the need for a physical facility given the rise of online sports betting in Iowa. But Swain said casino backers believe the benefits of tourism, economic development, and job creation, quote, don't happen when someone is playing slots on the phone, end quote. Quote, we think that the opportunity still is strong to build a large facility here in Cedar Rapids, Swain said. Should plans take shape to develop a local casino, the Cedar Rapids Development Group said Tuesday it has signed a deal with the Cedar Rapids Iowa City Building and Construction Trades Council, outlining the intention to enter a project labor agreement. Council President Mike Sadler, who signed the agreement, said in a statement that a casino would, quote, bring construction work for local tradesmen and women, end quote, as well as drive economic development and job growth. In September, Peninsula Pacific Entertainment and the Linn County Gaming Association announced area not-for-profit organizations would receive 8% of net revenue from any casino in Linn County, more than double the 3% required by the state. According to Iowa Gaming Association data from 2019, the most recent year not affected by COVID-19, the 15 Iowa counties with casinos distributed over $95 million, or an average of $6.3 million per county annually. By comparison, about $140,000 was distributed to each of the 84 communities without a casino through the community foundations. Ann Parmley, president of the not-for-profit County Gaming Association, said this contribution commitment helps people understand the potential impact of a casino. Quote, a lot of people want to see Cedar Rapids grow and thrive, and this is a key opportunity for us to be able to do that, Parmley said. Also on the front page of the Gazette is a photo essay titled View from Above. In the largest photo, fall color can be seen on Monday on the trees along the Wapsipinicon River at Pinicon Ridge Park in Central City. And these are all photographs taken from above. In two other photographs, fall color can be seen on the trees along the Wapsipinicon River at Pinicon Ridge Park in Central City. According to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, fall color peaks around mid-October for much of the state, but a warm spell around that time extended the peak color's run across the central part of the state, the DNR said. And in these photographs, the trees are largely still a yellowish-green, a strong yellowish-green color. There's not much orange or red or brown evident in these aerial photographs. In another front-page article, Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette writes, former coach faces counts of sexually abusing teen. Complaint says he locked student in room at Linmar. A former assistant track coach at Linmar High School and owner of a high school sports photography and video service in Marion was formally charged Tuesday with holding a 17-year-old male student in a school office bathroom and sexually abusing him during a September 27th so-called training program. Cameron Martell Beats, age 29, of Cedar Rapids, is charged with third-degree sexual abuse, third-degree kidnapping, sexual exploitation of a minor, sexual exploitation by a school employee, and invasion of privacy. The criminal complaint was filed October 22nd when a warrant was issued for Beats, but he wasn't arrested until 5 p.m. Monday by Marion and Cedar Rapids police in southwest Cedar Rapids. The complaint was made public Tuesday when Beats made an initial appearance in Linn County District Court. A 17-year-old Linmar student told police that Beats, who served as his coach, instructed the teen to send him nude photos or videos, according to a criminal complaint. Beats met September 27th with the teen in an office at Linmar High, quote, to perform a so-called physical analysis for Beats' personal training program. During that meeting, Beats told the teen to get undressed, and he molested and sexually abused him and confined him in a bathroom for over 45 minutes while the teen was naked, the complaint states. Beats took the teen's clothing and wouldn't give it back. The complaint states the police gathered forensic evidence of Beat's so-called unlawful actions. Linmar High officials, in a statement, said they are aware of the allegations but said Beats had resigned as a student supervisor April 14th and his contract as an assistant boys varsity track coach ended May 22nd. Quote, no complaints were received by school administration to suggest any misconduct in a school-related context, school officials said Tuesday. Quote, the district is following our procedures and cooperating with law enforcement, end quote. Beats continued to volunteer as an unpaid coach, however. After Beats was arrested Monday, Marion police said in a statement that they learned Beats had, quote, solicited inappropriate photographs from two minors, end quote. The complaint names only one victim, but Beats did have access to student athletes through his work and his sports photography business and personal training program called Beast Academy, which took photos and videos of sporting events across Iowa. Beats' LinkedIn profile states he founded Beast Academy in May 2020. The company's social media accounts show dozens of photos and videos taken at prep football games, baseball games, wrestling matches, and other events, mostly in eastern Iowa. Authorities said Monday they seized, quote, thousands of computer images depicting high school athletes, end quote, and were analyzing them for any other possible victims. Court documents show two temporary sexual abuse protective orders were issued September 28th against Beats. The orders, issued on behalf of two minors, direct that Beats be, quote, restrained from committing further acts of sexual abuse or threats of abuse, end quote, and not have contact with either minor. The orders identify the minors only by initials, but those initials do not match the teen's initials in the criminal complaint, raising the possibility of additional victims. Police said the parents who believe their child was victimized should call the Marion Police Department at 319-377-1511. Turning to Iowa Today, Vanessa Miller writes, UI eyes new training center for gymnasts, facility to cost up to $9 million. Backdropped by last year's elimination of men's gymnastics and this year's expansion of female athletics opportunities with the addition of women's wrestling, the University of Iowa is seeking permission to build a $7 million to $9 million Women's Gymnastics and Spirit Squad Training Center. UI officials are asking for Board of Regents permission to construct a 30,000-square-foot training center for the UI Women's Gymnastics Team and Spirit Squad south of the Hawkeye Tennis and Recreation Complex. Funding for the project would come from UI Athletic Department gifts and support a Hawkeye women's gymnastics program that has, quote, been a consistent top 25 team and begins the 2021 season ranked 17th in the nation, according to Regent documents. The UI women's gymnastics program, like the Hawkeye men's gymnastics program before it was eliminated after last season, trains in the historic fieldhouse just west of the Iowa River. Quote, the retrofitted basketball gymnasium was renovated in 2015 to construct foam pits for safety, but the space is limited and not expandable, according to the UI request of Regents. Quote, the fieldhouse location has many deficiencies, including limited gym space, inadequate locker room and restroom facilities, and limited temperature and humidity controls, end quote. Plus, according to the request, the fieldhouse doesn't contain appropriate facilities for strength and conditioning or training and recovery. Quote, a dedicated space designed specifically for gymnastics is desired to provide the facilities that are commensurate with a top-tier program, according to board documents. The two-story facility would include gymnastics practice space, equipment, locker rooms, a team room, coach's office, and multi-purpose viewing room. It also would include space for the UI Spirit Squad, involving Iowa cheerleaders, the Iowa dance team, and the Herky mascot. Quote, these three teams represent the black and gold, not only at Kinnick Stadium and Carver Hawkeye Arena, but around the campus and the nation, UI officials state. Strength and conditioning training spaces in the new center could be shared by other sports programs, according to the request, which does not include a proposed timeline for the project. UI Athletics last year, looking at a deficit in the tens of millions from the pandemic, announced plans to eliminate four programs: men's and women's swimming and diving, men's tennis, and men's gymnastics. the university backtracked on cutting women's swimming and diving after some of the athletes sued the school for violating Title IX requirements that it provide equal athletic opportunities and scholarships to women. A judge ruled that they were likely to prevail. As part of a settlement in that lawsuit, the university not only agreed to reinstate women's swimming and hire a Title IX monitor, but also to add a women's sport, namely wrestling. Despite a groundswell of advocates pushing for UI to change course on the men's cuts as well, raising millions in commitments to keep the programs going, the university has denied those requests, calling the eliminations final. The 8th-ranked Hawkeye men's gymnastics team in its final season in the spring finished 3rd at the 2021 Big Ten Championships, its best finish in 15 years. The Board of Regents will consider the project at its meeting next week. Aaron Murphy of the Gazette Lee Des Moines Bureau writes, Ernst Grassley joined call to speed response to assaults in military. Senators criticized Defense Department's, quote, vague approach and lax timeline, end quote. Iowa's Republican U.S. Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley have signed a bipartisan letter expressing their disappointment with the Pentagon's proposed timeline for implementing newly recommended measures to combat sexual assault in the military. The U.S. Defense Department in September announced its plan to implement recommendations put forth in a report from the Independent Review Commission on Sexual Assault, which was ordered by President Joe Biden. The proposal includes implementation of some measures between 2027 and 2030, according to the senator's letter. More than 20,000 active U.S. service members may have experienced sexual assault, according to the most recent study from the Defense Department. The letter, addressed to the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and signed by 8 U.S. senators, expresses frustration that the proposed implementation is too slow, calling it a, quote, vague approach and lacks timeline, end quote. Quote, this approach does not rise to the challenge of addressing the crippling and endemic sexual assault crisis afflicting our nation's military, the letter says. The letter also is signed, among others, by Democratic U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York. Ernst, a veteran and sexual assault survivor, and Grassley have in recent years worked with Gillibrand on addressing sexual assault in the military. They have proposed legislation that would move the decision whether to prosecute sexual assault allegations outside the military chain of command to independent military prosecutors and boost training and security measures. The senator's letter says if the bill proposed by Gillibrand, Ernst, and Grassley were to pass, many of the Defense Department's proposals would be mandated within 6 months. Gage Miskimen of the Gazette writes, HACAP gets $70,000 grant to encourage healthier eating. HACAP is receiving $70,000 in grant funding to address hunger, malnutrition, and chronic disease through offering healthier foods and decreasing the supply of unhealthy options at food banks. The Hawkeye Area Community Action Program Food Reservoir has joined the Partnership for a Healthier America's Health Hunger Relief Initiative. The partnership with the national nonprofit will aim to fight for food equity, a news release said. The HACAP Food Reservoir is one of 30 new health hunger relief partners and will implement, quote, a comprehensive nutrition ranking system, end quote, over the next 2 years. Partnership for a Healthier America also will provide technical assistance to help HACAP and its other partners understand the nutritional quality of the organization's food inventory and help assist in making decisions to improve that nutritional quality. Quote, individuals with a healthy diet are less likely to face chronic health conditions that require expensive medication, will miss less work and school, and have more energy, HACAP Food Reservoir Development Manager Alan Glenn Engel said in the release. Quote, by partnering with PHA, we can help provide families, seniors, and children with nutritious food that will help them care for themselves and set them up for success in other areas of life, end quote. Partnership for a Healthy America President and CEO Nancy Roman said these partnerships serve as the foundation to transform the so-called food landscape in pursuit of food equity. Quote, we're ensuring that communities and families all across the country have access to healthier, high-quality, culturally relevant, and nutritious foods, she said. The $70,000 HACAP has received will be used to establish the foundation needed to implement the nutrition ranking system and also to help distribute fresh produce. Partnership for a Healthier America works with 28 partners across the country and has brought 115 million pounds of healthy food into the emergency food system, a news release said. Adding 30 new partners will double the food program's reach across 18 states. The Food Bank of Iowa, based in Des Moines, also is one of the organization's new partners in this grant program. Let's turn now to the Insight page of Wednesday's Gazette. At the top of the page are two guest columns written by school board candidates. The first, written by Krista Burris, a candidate for Iowa City School Board, is titled, Education Opens Doors for All Children. My top priorities will focus on student preparedness, equity, and whole child. I am running for school board because I want to ensure that all students in our district have equal access to a high-quality education. I live in Iowa City and have two children in the Iowa City Community School District. Thus, I have a vested interest in the success of our school district. More broadly, as a community member, I know how important a high-quality K-12 education is for opening doors for all our children to have successful, rewarding adult lives. This is not only good for each and every one of our kids, but is good for our community, as a strong educational system promotes economic growth locally. My background in educational research will provide a unique and important skill set to the board. For the last 15 years, my career has focused on examining the relationship between student characteristics, academic opportunities, experiences, and achievement with long-term life outcomes, such as finishing college and getting a job. I have been doing this work at the national level. I want to use my expertise to support our educational system locally to improve student outcomes. My top priorities will focus on student preparedness, equity, and whole child, using data, science, and evidence to drive decision-making in each. In terms of student preparedness, I will advocate for resources to improve learner outcomes. Each and every student in our district should be on track to college and career readiness, starting in kindergarten through high school graduation. In terms of equity, I will focus on closing opportunity and achievement gaps, as well as increasing the diversity of school staff to resemble that of our community. For the whole child, I will advocate for social-emotional learning and education and career counseling in the curriculum to ensure our students leave our school district well-rounded, life-ready individuals. Again, this is the opinion of Krista Burris, a candidate for Iowa City School Board. Wednesday's Insight page also includes a column by Rachel Wall, a candidate for Lynn Mar School Board. Her column is titled, Moving Lynn Mar District Forward. I am eager to continue the work I've started and the work we've yet to embark on. I ran for school board in 2017 at a time when the district faced a critical need for additional infrastructure and there was significant anxiety among educators about major changes to collective bargaining laws. I hoped that I could use my voice to help move the district forward, and I'm very proud of the work that I've been a part of in that pursuit. During the 4 years I have now served on the board, I have dedicated myself to learning all about aspects of the district and how I can be most effective in my position. I have served on several committees, including both finance and policy, giving me insight into the complex nature of school funding and budgeting, and a more comprehensive understanding of what the board's role is and how it can be most effective. I have attended IASB conferences annually, where I have taken part in sessions related to school finance, as well as those that leave me inspired by the power of education and determined to champion its mission. I am acutely aware of the barriers to education that many of our students face and the powerful opportunity we have to make a difference in their lives, having faced significant adversity in my own childhood. I grew up in a single-parent home, raised by a mother who suffers from severe mental health and addiction challenges. Like many of our students, I carry the lasting scars of trauma and know personally how meaningful a positive learning environment is to their well-being. I am eager to continue the work I've started and the work we've yet to embark upon. I feel called to serve in this way, and I would be honored to have your vote on November 2nd. Again, this is the opinion of Rachel Wall, a candidate for Lynn Mar School Board. In today's community letters, Janie Mills of Cedar Rapids writes, Vote Dale Todd for CR City Council. Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, Dale Todd came to Cedar Rapids back in 1976 to attend Coe College. and he's been here ever since. He made Cedar Rapids his home and has worked hard on making it a better place for us all to live, work, and play. Dale is generous with his time and knowledge and thinks outside the box to accomplish his goals. I'll be voting for him to continue to share and apply his values, ideas, and knowledge to help Cedar Rapids grow and move forward. I appreciate his valuable expertise in the areas of safety, public works, neighborhoods, and recreation. For decades, he has been committed to moving our city forward. We have been fortunate to have him work for all of Cedar Rapids. Voting for Dale Todd will get things done for our city. In the years to come, I know that he will continue to serve Cedar Rapids with integrity. Let's give him our support. Signed, Janie Mills of Cedar Rapids. Anthony Arrington of Cedar Rapids writes, Re-elect Humbles for CR School Board. For the Cedar Rapids Community School District to remain strong, it is important to have capable school board members who will ensure our school leadership is given sound advice, push district leadership at all levels toward excellence, and put kids first in every single decision. We need bold, forward-thinking, rational thinkers who are passionate about education, who deeply value diversity, equity, and inclusion both inside and outside the walls of our schools, and who demand accountability from our academic leaders. When you consider the high expectations we have for our board, it must be led by a strong president. Without question, that leader is Nancy Humbles, and we must re-elect her. Nancy has been a CRCSD board member since 2009 and has guided this board as president under the most challenging times our district has ever faced. We need her to keep steering the ship. And let's be brutally honest here. We are in historically challenging times as it pertains to equity, race relations, and how we educate our children. As the first Black president of our board who has a unique perspective on how education impacts minority and low-income students, her own children are products of the district, we could not ask for a better leader in this day and in this time in our history. I will be proudly supporting Nancy on November 2nd for re-election as president of the Cedar Rapids School Board and ask that you do the same. Signed, Anthony Arrington of Cedar Rapids. Michelle Buss of Cedar Rapids writes, Mayor Hart has earned another term. I am writing to express my continued support for Brad Hart as mayor of Cedar Rapids. I was a strong supporter of Brad when he originally ran, based on his proven track record of community and business leadership and involvement. Then as now, I believe he wanted to be our mayor for the right reasons. Brad is not a politician. Rather, he is truly a public servant with the best interests of the entire community at heart. We have witnessed the results of his leadership during his time in office. Miles of improved streets, continued progress on flood control, businesses supported by economic development, increased affordable housing, growth in our tax base and population, to name just a few. These accomplishments only bolster my support for Brad. Our city has been able to maintain momentum and move forward despite the pandemic and the derecho that have impacted us all. Brad's integrity, leadership, and experience will allow Cedar Rapids to continue this positive momentum in the years to come. Please join me in voting for Brad Hart for mayor of Cedar Rapids. Signed, Michelle Buss of Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, October 27, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Mason Stephen Akers, age 25, died peacefully in his sleep at home Saturday, October 23rd. Visitation for family and friends will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Thursday, October 28th at Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City. Family committal services will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, friends may contribute to the charity of their choice or to the Mason Akers Memorial Fund, P.O. Box 167, Iowa City 52244. Mason was born July 16, 1996, in Iowa City, the son of Mark Akers and Kim Barnes. He was a 2014 graduate of Washington High School in Cedar Rapids and attended Kirkwood Community College. Online condolences may be left for the family at lensingfuneral.com. Jordan Paul Reeder, aged 36, of Cedar Rapids, passed away unexpectedly Monday, October 25th. Memorial service will be held 10:30 a.m. Friday, October 29th, at St. Andrew Lutheran Church on Center Point Road in Cedar Rapids. There will be a visitation 1 hour prior, starting at 9:30 a.m. at the church. Jordan was born December 3rd, 1984, in Cedar Rapids, the son of Jeffrey Reeder and Mary Garris. He graduated from Xavier High School in 2003. Jordan was a lifelong resident of Cedar Rapids. Online condolences may be directed to the family at the website cedarmemorial.com. Charles Gene Hartman, known as Chuck, age 65, of Cedar Rapids, died October 25th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. A celebration of life gathering will take place at a later date. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Cedar Rapids assisted the family. Chuck was born February 10, 1956, the son of Charles Sr. and Carol Polson Hartman. He attended Jefferson High School and held various positions in the construction field throughout his life. Please share a memory of Chuck at the website murdochfuneralhome.com. John A. Strutz passed away Sunday, October 24th, at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. John was born at Roseland Community Hospital in Chicago on December 28, 1959. After he graduated from Oak Forest High School, he went on to earn his AA from Morrison Institute of Technology. John and Angela were married for 38 years and together raised 4 children. John spent 33 years in the hardwood flooring industry, serving the greater Cedar Rapids community through his own business, John's Hardwood Floor Service, for 25 years. The family will host a celebration of life at 11 a.m. Thursday, October 28th, at Cedar Valley Bible Church. In lieu of flowers, please consider a tribute donation to the Polycystic Kidney Disease Foundation. Isabel Early, aged 84, of Independence, passed away Saturday, October 23rd. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 28, at Geilenfeld Buhner Funeral Home in Olwine. Funeral services will begin at 10:30 a.m. Friday, October 29th, at the funeral home, with Pastor Dwayne Olson officiating. Interment will be in Woodlawn Cemetery in Olwine. A memorial fund has been established. Isabel Esther Early was born on the family farm in rural Sumner on August 31st, 1937, to parents Neil and Esther Specht Fox. She graduated from Sumner High School with the class of 1954. Isabel was a homemaker as well as a CNA with nursing homes in both Cedar Rapids and Olwine. Lorraine Teresa Takes, aged 87, of Cascade, departed for heaven while surrounded by her family on Saturday, October 24th, at Shady Rest Care Center in Cascade. Visitation for Lorraine will be held at 9:30 a.m. Friday, October 29th, at St. Martin's Catholic Church in Cascade, where a mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. at the church, with Reverend Mark Osterhaus presiding. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade, with a luncheon to follow at the Knights of Hall. That might be the Knights of Columbus Hall on Thomas Street Southeast in Cascade. Lorraine was born January 16, 1934, in Walker, Iowa, the daughter of Howard and Irene Crowley Franklin. She was raised in a loving family in rural Iowa along with her 6 brothers and her horse, Betty, all of whom will forever know her as their Sissy. She was a graduate of Marion High School, where she enjoyed playing in and traveling with perhaps one of the only high school accordion bands in the state of Iowa. She was also a 1955 graduate of Mount Mercy College in Cedar Rapids, where she received her diploma in nursing. She was united in marriage to Leo A. Takes on May 2nd, 1957, in Marion. Lorraine's family has established a memorial to benefit the missions and staff of Shady Rest Care Center and Hospice of Dubuque. Online condolences may be left for the family at the website rifefuneralhomeinc.com. Terry E. Jacobson of Center Point passed away October 23rd. Born April 15th, 1963, at 5.5 months gestation, Terry was a living miracle. Terry often referenced his 9 lives as he survived unique life events. A family and friends memorial gathering will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 13th at the LJL Hall in Center Point. In lieu of flowers, please send condolences and contributions to Estate of Terry E. Jacobson, P.O. Box 394, Center Point, Iowa 52213. Ivadel Cora Selk Straka, known as Ivy, age 90, passed away peacefully Monday, October 25th at Hospice of Mercy in Hiawatha. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Friday, October 29th at Phillips Funeral Home in Blairstown. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 29th at the funeral home, with Lyle Beaver officiating. Interment will be held at International Cemetery in Lucerne. Ivy was born May 22, 1931, on a farm northwest of Keystone, to Adolph P. and Mabel Parker Selk. She was educated in rural schools in Kane Township and graduated from Keystone High School with the class of 1949. On November 20, 1949, she was united in marriage to Milo Straka at First Congregational Church in Belle Plaine. Ivadel and Milo farmed until Milo passed away from a heart attack in 1986. Online condolences for Ivy's family may be left at phillipsfuneralhomes.com. Maurice Lee Grissom, known as Gus, was born March 13, 1948, in Independence, the son of Morris Frank and Maxine Velma Warner Grissom. Gus passed away at his home in Morrilton, Arkansas, on October 23rd at the age of 73. Gus was a veteran of the U.S. Navy. He was a lineman for Southwestern Bell and worked for the company until retirement. Online condolences may be left at the website bobneilandsons.com. Stephen D. Coley, aged 69, of Iowa City, entered into glory on Friday, October 22nd. A service to celebrate the life of Steve will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, October 29th at Parkview Church on Foster Road, with a simple reception to follow. For a complete obituary and to share a thought, memory, or condolence with Steve's family, please visit the funeral home website at gayandchia.com. Dallas P. Robertson, aged 65, of Iowa City, passed away suddenly on Sunday, October 24th. Visitation will be held from noon until 2 p.m. Saturday, October 30th at Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service. Dallas Paul Robertson was born July 23, 1956, to Donald and Ellen Huffer Robertson. He graduated from Iowa City West High School and then entered the U.S. Navy. Dallas served in the Navy from 1975 to 1979 before being honorably discharged. He worked for several years at Foster Maytag before becoming employed at the University of Iowa in Residence Services Maintenance. Dallas was currently employed in facilities maintenance for the University of Iowa. Online condolences may be sent for his family through the website at gayandchia.com. Frank William Gretter, age 96, died October 23rd at home in rural Keota. He was born in rural Harper on October 23rd, 1925, to Wynne and Margaret Flander Gretter. He graduated from St. Elizabeth School in Harper. On March 31, 1951, he married Audrey Ann Smith at St. Elizabeth Catholic Church. The same year he was married, he was drafted into the Marines. He was stationed in South Korea and served the United States during the Korean War. He ran and operated the family business, W.C. Gretters & Sons, with his brother Robert, and farmed in the Harper area his entire life. Bill, as he was known to most, was a member of Holy Trinity Parishes, St. Mary's Kyoto, the Knights of Columbus Windthors Council, a Fourth Degree Knight Father Growth Assembly, and the VFW of Kyoto. Memorial Mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, October 29th at Holy Trinity Parish, St. Mary Catholic Church in Kyoto, with the Reverend Charles Fleidung and the Reverend Robert Lathrop officiating. Burial will be at Holy Trinity's Cemetery, St. Elizabeth Cemetery in Harper. Visitation will be from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 28th at the church, where there will be a vigil service at 4 p.m. Tributes may be made at the website powellfuneralhomes.com. Ralph Richardson, aged 87, of Marion, passed away Monday, October 25th at St. Luke's Hospital. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 29th at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion. Funeral service will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 30th at the funeral home, with burial to follow at Oakshade Cemetery in Marion. Please share a memory of Ralph at the website murdockfuneralhome.com. Mary Jean Hemiseth, aged 85, of Ryan, passed away Monday, October 25th at the ABCM East Care Center in Independence. Memorial services will be at 6 p.m. Thursday, October 28th at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester, with Pastor Rhea Evanson officiating. Visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Thursday, October 28th at the funeral home. There will be a private family interment at a later date. Online condolences may be left for the family of Mary Jean at the website leonardmullerfh.com. Shirley Ann Dowd, aged 85, of Vinton, formerly of Garrison, passed away Sunday, October 24th at Keystone Nursing Care Center following an extended illness. A celebration of Shirley's life will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday, November 20th at Phillips Funeral Home Chapel, 212 East 6th Street in Vinton. Shirley was born April 16, 1936, in Independence to Orville and Grace Baker Pelly. She graduated from Vinton High School in May of 1953. She worked at Collins for several years before starting her career at the Iowa Braille and Sight Saving School, where she worked in the accounting office from 1967 until she retired in 1993. She then worked at TLC Preschool and at Kirkwood at the Vinton facility. Online condolences may be left at phillipsfuneralhomes.com. Beth Hagee, aged 81, of Winthrop, died Wednesday afternoon, October 20th, at Prairie Hills Assisted Living in Independence. Funeral service will be 1 p.m. Friday, November 5th, at United Methodist Church in Dayton, Iowa, with Pastor Kathleen Christie officiating. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 3rd, at Fawcett Schmidt's Funeral Home in Winthrop, and 1 hour before the service Friday at the church. Interment will be at Dayton Cemetery in Dayton, Iowa. A memorial fund has been established for Alzheimer's research. Online obituary and condolences may be left at the website jamesonschmidtsfuneralhome.com. That concludes the obituaries in Wednesday's Gazette. Let's turn now to the sports section of Wednesday's Gazette. It includes articles featuring the upcoming games on Saturday, in which number 22, Iowa State, faces West Virginia at the Milan Puskar Stadium in Morgantown, West Virginia. This game will begin at 1 p.m. and streamed at ESPN+. Iowa State is favored by 7. Another game on Saturday in college football will include number 9, Iowa, at Wisconsin. played at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison. Kickoff will be at 11 a.m., and the game will be televised on ESPN. Wisconsin is favored by 3.5 points. The Gazette also includes a photo essay on high school girls' volleyball. In one photograph, Marion's Avery Van Hook and Natalie Hartman both save a ball from going out of bounds against Benton Community last night at Marion High School. In another photograph, Cedar Rapids Kennedy's J.C. Powell attacks into the block of Johnston's Marin Rasmussen and Dasheva Svitchev during the first set of their Class 5A regional final volleyball match last night in Cedar Rapids. In another photograph, Kennedy's Mara Fluent and Megan Feldman joust at the net with Johnston's Josie Punt. In a final photograph, Marion's Peyton Johnson tips the ball over the net for a point against Benton Community last night at Marion High School. Tonight's regional finals in girls volleyball include Class 2A Beckman playing against Wapsie Valley in Independence, Class 1A Springville playing against St. Ansgar at Waterloo West, Lisbon playing against North Tama at Van Horn. In community news, Gage Miskeman writes, "Style, candy, fun. Show off your costume at the Marion Halloween Fashion Show on Friday." The city plans to kick off Halloween a couple of days early this year with some spooky fashion. At 4 p.m. Friday, Marion is hosting its first Halloween fashion show in the Uptown Artway. City event coordinator Jessica Carney said she's excited to put on the first event of its kind and said though the event may be geared toward kids, everyone is welcome. Quote, "We know some people get a kick out of family or group costumes, so it's not strictly kids," Carney said. "Anyone can participate," end quote. Carney said the event is fairly simple. A costumed individual walks across the stage while an announcer says their name and costume. Then they walk off the stage and get some candy. The city usually has held trick-or-treating in City Hall leading up to Halloween. The fashion show is replacing the City Hall tradition. Quote, "We want to expand on that and bring people to the Uptown Artway as a way to give kids another chance to show their Halloween costumes," Carney said. Just last month, the city hosted a dog fashion show in the Artway, which saw a successful turnout, Carney said. She said she's hoping to see around 75 people show up to watch the Halloween fashion show, with at least 20 people participating. Quote, "People usually want to come watch, but they can be hesitant to walk across the stage, so I hope people will sign up to participate," she said. "It only takes 1 second to walk across the stage," end quote. For those interested in signing up their children or themselves, online registration is available and open a couple hours before the event. Interested individuals can register on the city's website. Carney said between the dog fashion show and the upcoming Halloween fashion show, she has been trying to keep the Uptown Artway in mind as a venue for community events. She added that hosting events in the space may be more important than ever to get people into Uptown Marion as construction on the 7th Avenue streetscape continues. Quote, "We have this beautiful, unique space, but there wasn't a lot of programming in it," she said. "It's important to get people into Uptown and visiting businesses. The Artway has been my special focus for a while, and with construction there, I'm continuing to focus on that." In things to do this week, family-friendly Halloween continues at the Iowa Children's Museum at Coral Ridge Mall. This is from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. for $9. Creepy crawly spiders and happy jack-o'-lanterns have found their way into the exhibits. All Halloween activities are included with museum admission. More information is available at theicm.org. In Cedar Rapids, the Cedar Rapids Area Genealogy Library is a place where you can research your family tree with the help of library volunteers. The library is located in the lower level of the Masonic Building on 1st Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids. This is free from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You are also welcome to join the Cedar Rapids Chess Club for a relaxed, casual game session. today, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Cedar Rapids Public Library on 5th Avenue Southeast. This is free and open to all ages. There is an exhibit at Mount Mercy University titled Heroism and Sacrifice After the Attack. On September 11, 2001, there were countless acts of selflessness and heroism in response to the deadliest terrorist attack on American soil. This is a commemorative conversation about the heroism and selflessness in response to 9/11, part of the Fall Faculty Series. This will be held at Mount Mercy from 6 to 7 p.m. in the Flaherty Community Room on Elmhurst Drive Northeast in Cedar Rapids. This is free. The Prairie Woods Franciscan Spirituality Center also is hosting Prairie Woods Knitters and Stitchers tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. You can create hats, mittens, blankets, baby clothes, and other handmade items for charity. New participants and all skill levels are welcome. No registration is necessary. Again, this is the Prairie Woods Franciscan. This is the Prairie Woods Knitters and Stitchers group meeting at the Prairie Woods Franciscan Spirituality Center at 120 East Boyson Road in Hiawatha. This is a free event from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. tonight. Today's Peanuts comic features a conversation between Lucy and Charlie Brown. Lucy says, "Do you realize how many great moments in life are wasted? Take, for instance, the great moment that is coming up right now. Bang! It's gone! You've just wasted it!" A shaken Charlie Brown says, "You're a lot of fun to be around." Today's Pickles comic features the mother saying to her husband, "Earl, I thought we were going out to dinner." Earl says, "Yep." She says, "Well, I'm not going if you're wearing that ridiculous jumpsuit. Can't you just put on something more appropriate?" "Fine," says Earl as he walks away in his green jumpsuit. Earl returns in the next frame wearing plaid shorts and a brightly colored flowered shirt with black socks up to his knees and says, "How's this?" She says, "I'll warm up the leftovers." In today's Dear Abby, Distressed in Ohio writes, "Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married for 25 years. He has recently started running around with his buddies and partying. He hardly has time for me anymore. I found out he had cheated on me, not once but several times, with different women. I was devastated, so I left for a while, but I decided to try to work things out. During the time I was gone, I ended up cheating as well. I'm sorry for it, but I developed some very real feelings for someone. I haven't seen him in 2 years, but I still feel myself wanting him and wanting to be with him. I love my husband, and we are working things out, but I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm in love with both of them. I still talk to the other person via text, but we don't go any further." Signed, Distressed in Ohio. Dear Distressed, you may be in love with both of them, but you made a commitment to work things out with your husband. If you are sincere about it, you will have to disengage fully from the man you cheated with and concentrate on your marriage. If you are not sure you can do that, marital counseling may help you decide what your next step should be. But a word of warning, the grass is not always greener once you have jumped the fence. And in the Top Weather Story, which is a series featuring highlights from history, trivia, and events in weather, meteorologist Kai O'Mara writes, "Another soaker coming tomorrow." This morning, there may be an isolated shower around, but for many of us, the soaker will wait until tomorrow. So far this month, Cedar Rapids has received 5.51 inches of rainfall, with the bulk of this occurring in 3 separate heavy rain events. That's about double the typical average for October, and we still have one more system to go. Rainfall potential tomorrow still looks to be in the 0.5 inch to 1 inch range locally, which could push us over 6 inches for the monthly total. That has occurred only 3 other times in October since 1892. Those years are 1951, 1998, and 2009. Time will tell if 2021 will join this club or not. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, October 27, 2021. I'm your reader, Paula Carrezzi. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Whales and dolphins are spectacular creatures. Their ancestors climbed out of the ocean 360 million years ago, developed lungs and legs, and evolved into mammals. Then, 50 million years ago, they walked back into the sea. To survive there, they developed specialized behaviors, which require even more special biology. Perhaps most famous is echolocation. They move air between sinus cavities to emit sound. When it bounces back to them, they don't hear it with their ears, but feel it in a fatty fluid in their lower jaw. Only toothed whales, like sperm whales, orcas, and dolphins, can echolocate, which we think they developed to hunt prey, especially squid, in the darkness of the deep ocean. Baleen whales focused on other prey, floating shrimp-like creatures, and for this they develop comb-like plates in place of teeth. They can't echolocate, but are known for their elaborate songs. We think they use these for communication, but we're not sure how they produce them, since they don't have vocal cords. Both types of whales can hold their breath for 45 minutes or longer. To do this, they reduce their heart rate and cut blood flow to some organs, like the stomach, while providing it to others, like the brain. Even their blood is specialized. It can carry far more oxygen than land-dwelling mammals, and they have much more of it. Whales are an amazing example of what evolution can do, given enough time. I'm Scott Tinker, spouting off on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.